Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a product strategist, user engagement master, former professional poker player, and now an entrepreneur. He is a former senior product manager for eBay during their early years. He then moved on to VP of product for AdChemy, and his last job was VP of product and UX for Opower. Since 2014, though, he has been running and growing Foster Innovation, a consulting firm that helps startups tackle product problems and growth bottlenecks. Now, let's hack Ben Foster. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, ActiveCampaign. So building your email list and using it to grow and develop your business even further, we know is such an essential building block of working online. Yet so many people and so many businesses that I deal with as a customer just never seem to get it right. They use just that standard basic email marketing that isn't targeted, isn't personalized, and it doesn't make me a satisfied customer. Companies that use marketing automation see 53% higher conversions than those that use traditional email marketing. What if you could send emails based on intelligence you've gained from your customers' actions and behaviors? With ActiveCampaign, you can. You can treat your contacts as unique individuals rather than sending everyone the same boring message. With marketing automation, your campaigns can listen, learn, adapt, and respond, all based on your contacts' behaviors and their customer profile as it changes. See why thousands are upgrading to a more intelligent marketing solution. Sign up a free 14-day trial now. No credit card needed at all. Visit activecampaign.com/hack. There's no training fees. There's no contracts. Pricing is accessible to every single size of business. Start marketing smarter today. Get and convert more leads with ActiveCampaign at activecampaign.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur, and today we have another very, very special guest. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, I think this is going to be a blast.
Yeah, me too.
Excellent. Let's jump straight into it, Ben. Ben, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Wow. I think it's a really good question. To me, I guess I would say that when I'm presented with a problem, I don't just try to think about how to solve that problem that's facing me right now. I try to think about how to solve that problem in such a way that it's solved every time. You know, I don't ever want to have to try to solve that problem again. And so I try to think about the scalable solutions to things. And I feel like that's probably been the number one contributor to my success.
Wow. So like, what does that mean? Like setting up like a process, or does that mean just not banging your head against the wall over and over again?
I think it really is about the process, right? So, you know, a good example is, and I try to apply this with a lot of startups that I work with these days, is that I try to, you know, if I need to hire somebody, I don't just try to think about how do I hire that one person right now. I try to think about how do I make it so that I don't have to worry about hiring challenges in general. So maybe I hire the head of recruiting for the business, and then that person can kind of take care of it. Or I say, if I'm having a hard time trying to sell a particular candidate on the opportunity, how do I provide the materials such that I can send those kinds of materials to this candidate and to all candidates in the future?
That's smart. That's really smart. Is that something you've figured out in this sort of path? Or is this like, does it make sense looking back at it now? Or was this something going forward you're like, this is how I'm going to organize the business?
I guess that it's really a function of where I cut my teeth in product management. I started working at eBay, and I was there from 01 to 05. And while I was there, the company grew just incredibly fast. When I joined, I was one of 12 product managers. And when I left 4 years later, I was one of 120 product managers. And so as the company scaled and there were so many other people that as a product manager, we had to work with, that you realize that just for the sake of communication alone, you needed to find scalable ways of doing that. And so hallway conversations that used to work one day started to you know, need to be scalable solutions for communication, like documentation. I mean, we had like early versions of a wiki before wikis were really like known. And we used those kinds of like methods to try to communicate with people. And then you start applying that same kind of methodology to whether it's recruiting, or you apply that methodology to prioritization practices, et cetera. And you start to realize over and over again that the same kinds of challenges are being faced by many different startups. And having had those experiences myself of working at a number of different places, I've just seen that same kind of challenge show up time and time again. And as you move companies and I switched from one company to the next company, I'd want to take with me the frameworks and the solutions that I applied in one place and kind of like carry those to use those as a jumping off point for the next company as well. So I wasn't starting from scratch every time.
Smart. So you didn't keep blinders on when you were working at other companies. You tried to kind of see how the structure of the company sort of worked and how it evolved into something bigger.
Yeah. And to try to use what I think, you know, what I learned about what works and what doesn't work from one company and try to apply that and try to apply those generalized solutions that could still be applicable at the next company as well. You know, so if I've got a particular framework for having conversations with stakeholders about product decisions that we need to make, then I could port that over to the next company as well. But that's by thinking about it as a generalized kind of like problem that you're going to face, that I was able to kind of create those documents and kind of carry those to the next place, create those practices and carry those to the next place, and kind of just hit the ground running at the next place that I was at. Because it's just so important in the startup world that you're not spending the first year at a given job acclimating to what you're doing and trying to, you know, learn the ropes there. I think you kind of have to just jump in with both feet because things are just moving so fast.
Exactly. Yeah, totally. And so let's talk about jumping right in. So from eBay in 2001 through about 16 years of product management in other companies. But then in 2014, you decided to go it on your own, right? And there seems to be this time sort of in every entrepreneur's life where this happens. And they either have this calling to just make something, some big difference in the world, or they find that they just don't want to work for somebody else anymore. So could you tell me sort of which side of the fence you fall on, Ben, and how this sort of evolved in your life?
So, you know, I still wonder the same kind of question myself. I would say that it's probably a little bit of both. I've had plenty of experiences working as, you know, a head of product management at a lot of different kinds of companies, and those companies have succeeded. So I kind of, on the one hand, felt like I'd already accomplished the kinds of things that I wanted to do. And a lot of people have always recommended to me, you know, why don't you go start your own thing and become, you know, that CEO and that founder of the next company. And to me, it just hasn't really been something that's been of interest. And so my interpretation of that was always that I didn't really want to be an entrepreneur. And yet here I kind of like find myself running this consultancy and advisory practice and realizing that I'm actually accidentally an entrepreneur. So, you know, as I sort of look at the reality of that situation, I try to look back and say, how did that happen? I think that what took place is that I had a fulfillment of the experiences that I wanted to have with the other companies. I feel like I accomplished what I had set out to accomplish in doing that. And I really had this transition point where I just wanted to share some of the same kinds of practices and things like that that I had put in place with other people. And it was the best way to have influence was to kind of like move in this direction. And so it wasn't so much that I said, I want to be an entrepreneur. Now, how do I go about making that happen? And this is a way of doing it. It's more that I just have this passion around the work itself that I'm doing. And the best way to execute against that was to be my own boss.
I like it. I like it a lot. So accidental entrepreneur. And you felt like you had taken it far enough. So can we discuss what you're doing now with your consultancy? It's a one-man show at this point, right?
It is. It is at this point, and I also expect that it will be long-term as well. And again, I think that comes back to having this personal and individual passion for rolling up the sleeves and working with a lot of startups and helping them to scale and helping them to succeed in similar ways that I've, you know, had on my own. And so what I've been doing is taking a lot of those same kinds of frameworks and those same kinds of generalized solutions for problems that a lot of different kinds of startups face, whether they're B2B applications or whether they're direct sort of like to consumer applications, and take all those kinds of things that I've put together for those and apply those into those companies. Sometimes that's done as an advisory post where I might join an advisory board and try to bring those kinds of things as well as a network to bear for them. And then sometimes it's more hands-on consulting and there's a particular deliverable they're looking for, like a new product strategy, or they're looking for a methodology for how they should incorporate design into the strategic thinking process for where they go, much like the way that Apple does that. And so I've tried to provide those kinds of, you know, things to these different companies. But what I've found is that I enjoy the fact that each company is a little bit unique and they have their own set of challenges. But at the same time, if you abstract it enough, you find that it's actually the same kind of set of challenges that's going across all these different companies.
Yeah, I would think that there's a huge correlation that only really you can see because you get to step outside of all of them, or you are outside of them, and you can kind of work with three of them at once and be like, wow, they're all the same. But yeah, they all think they're unique creatures. But
yeah, I think that's exactly right. You know, it's really because of two different things. I think one of them is, you know, some people describe it as the 50,000 foot view or something like that. I kind of like to think of it as like a wide angle lens. And if you think about what you see when you put a wide angle lens on a camera, you see a very different kind of picture than what you see when you put a zoom lens on. And with that wide angle lens, I have a level of visibility into what's going on at the company that even those inside, sometimes even the CEOs themselves, have a really hard time seeing. But then in addition to that, I've got that same wide angle lens with many different companies. And I think that when you put those two things together, it's almost like you can kind of get that panoramic shot and see how all the puzzle pieces sort of like fit together and then help to explain to the company where they stand relative to benchmarks of other companies and to kind of like share those best practices across them.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. So I can tell just by talking to you and I can tell by doing the research on you that you are, your brain and the way you think is in demand in product strategy, user engagement, all those things, right? So how, or why actually, why first are you going to consciously not scale your business? Why are you going to keep it as a one-man operation?
My focus is not so much on maximizing profit out of a business. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs get into it thinking, you know, either for themselves, they want to make as much money as they can, or because they, in order to succeed at what they had originally set out to, they had to go get venture funding, and their, you know, motivation is to try to maximize the amount of money that they can make out of this. For me, I think it's primarily about the work. You know, I really enjoy rolling up the sleeves and working with these companies and learning as I'm doing that. I feel like I'm getting better at what I do every time that I work with the next company. And every time that I work with them, I get to be better at helping the other companies because I see yet another data point that I can try to apply to them as well. So I love being able to do the work myself, and I can either grow that by spending, you know, 80 hours a week doing this kind of thing, or I can grow it by trying to hire somebody else. But if I hire somebody else, I kind of find myself in that situation where I'm delegating the work that I myself actually wanted to do, and I become sort of like the salesperson, if you will. And, you know, we've all had that experience where you have a great conversation with somebody. Maybe they're a consultant or an advisor, and you know, you're like, okay, where do I sign? I love this. And then they say, okay, great. You know, let me introduce you now to my intern who's actually going to do the work. And I think it's bad for the client, and it's also bad for me. So for myself, my interest is really in trying to provide the maximum help that I can to the clients that I'm working with. And the best way for me to do that is hands-on personally myself. And I think that there are other ways that I can imagine that I could try to increase the scale of the business that I'm doing without necessarily diluting the value that I'm trying to bring to a lot of the startups and entrepreneurs that I work with.
Yeah. So would you say that the ultimate value of the business to you is more, say, personal than professional, in the fact that you don't need to make a mark by like saying, I got 50 consultants working under me? You kind of want to not be consumed by this new consultancy?
It's both. I really have a hard time disambiguating what's personal and what's professional these days because I have a personal passion for the kind of work that I'm doing. I really enjoy the startup world. I enjoy the tech space. I enjoy being part of that. It's something that I would choose to do with my time if I weren't making money doing it anyway. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to say this part's personal, this part's professional. What I can say is that I know what type of work I want to be able to do, and I know what kind of influence I want to be able to have. And certainly my interest is in maximizing that influence. I just don't believe that that necessarily happens by having the maximum number of people you know, working under me. And I guess the funny thing here, the irony is, in so many ways, the reason that companies bring me in to try to help them out is because they're trying to scale as large and as fast as they can as a startup. And yet I myself, with my own business, don't have that same interest in scaling the way that they do.
But you can help them scale.
That's right.
I love that. I love that. And I love the sort of the grayish area of between professional and personal. I think that that's kind of essential, especially when you're trying to, I mean, I'm going to go out on a limb and call it kind of a lifestyle sort of business you've created, where it's more important how your life is affected in the long term than it is just by maximizing all growth and put everything of your personal life and your own self kind of to the side, because the business is all that matters. So
that's right. And I've heard a few of the other, you know, Hack the Entrepreneur episodes, and there was something that really resonated with me that I heard, and I can't remember exactly who said it, but what they were saying is that the important thing, and I think the hack in this case, was to stay true to why they started the business in the first place. That was something that was really key to them and that they thought was really valuable for their own success. And if they look back, they couldn't imagine how they could have been successful had they not had this really clear sense of what it meant to stay true to the reason that they started the company in the first place. And I think that same thing kind of thing is true for me. So I don't think that that's necessarily a decision that you have to make that precludes you from scaling. Sometimes that's the way in which you scale. And sometimes that's the way in which you choose not to scale, in my case. But I think that however you define success for yourself, staying true, at least for me, has been something that I've had to really focus on. And I think that I've gotten a lot out of.
Yeah. So very, very well said. And now all I'm wondering is, if can we get really meta and can I make a hack on a hack for this episode? I guess people have to stay tuned to find out. But yeah, that's why I really wanted to kind of push that point about that, because I think you're right that it should be defined by you and you have to stay true to that. And that's why I wanted to go deep on that. But we will move on. I will allow us to. So, Ben, every expert now talks 80-20. Do 20% of the work get 80% of the results? Earlier on, you mentioned the whole delegation thing, and I know that you're kind of trying to stay away from it, but can you tell me something in your business that you are absolutely not good at?
I guess for me, I like to stay at a little bit of an arm's length from the business as well. I don't want to get myself to be too close to what the business is doing. I think that to some extent, if I do that, that I lose that wide angle view that I might have had before. And so it's a little bit of a balancing act, because I get really passionate about the problems that I'm working on. And you know, a lot of times you need to understand them at a very detailed and nuanced level to really have the right kinds of recommendations for the next step. And so for me, I think the thing that I struggle with is how to not get sucked in, if you will, with the advising work that I'm doing. I want to make sure that I keep that arm's length away. And something that I'm not necessarily good at, and I think that this applied when I was doing hands-on work as a VP of product as well, is that it's really hard to not get into the weeds. You know, I like the details, and the details to me matter a lot. But at the same time, the way that I can provide the best kind of like value and the best kind of service to the clients that I work with is to stay at a little bit of a farther away, you know, distance.
Smart. So from 2001, early eBay days, to coming into 2016 now, as a complete outsider in that, like in the product management, product strategy, user engagement world, has that world changed as much as I think it should from then till now? Or is the overlying wide angle view still relatively similar, but the technology underneath of it has changed?
That is a great question. And I think everybody would probably have a little bit of a different perspective on that. I'll share with you what my perspective is, which is that what makes people tick, and what makes a product really engaging and design really good is the same that it's always been, to be honest. I don't think that that's actually changed, and people haven't changed, et cetera. I think what has changed is our level of understanding about that. And if you look at the work that's been done, even in the academic community, around behavioral science and understanding why people share things and understanding why people engage with products and how triggers are effective, there's this whole body of research around that, whether it's, you know, BJ Fogg, or whether it's, you know, Bob Cialdini, or whether it's Jonah Berger. You know, there's been a lot of great work done on the science behind understanding how people choose to use the things that they use. And I think that because of that body of research, there's now a language that we have to actually speak about those kinds of things. And it certainly made my job a lot easier because I can actually refer to those things and not just merely talk about them in the abstract. A great example of this is when I was working at eBay, we had a whole variety of different kinds of features that we could work on next. And we had this big question of, well, what do we prioritize? We probably had five times as many projects that we could work on as we had capacity to work on them. And so the choice was made really either by going way overly scientific and trying to do this rigid NPV and ROI analysis on every single potential improvement that we could make, which was, of course, a situation where everybody would just kind of like fudge their numbers. Or we could go the other path and say, well, there's just this secret sauce that eBay had, and everybody referred to it. Even the upper management team would refer to it as eBay's secret sauce for success. And we knew that we were successful as a business at the time, but even within the company, we couldn't tell you why. And I think that was sort of like a big problem because there wasn't a sense as to why people were using eBay instead of what, to be honest, was a better consumer experience at the time, which was that of Amazon and still is today. You know, and so what I didn't like about the secret sauce analogy at the time, and I still don't like now, is that it's one thing when the customer doesn't know what the recipe for the secret sauce is. That's why it's secret. It's another thing when the cooks in the kitchen don't know what the recipe for the secret sauce is.
Oh, man.
Because they can't improve it. You know, they can't make it better. They can't know how to maintain it. And they don't know what's going to make that sauce spoil to some extent. And so we were really reluctant, I think, as a business to make some of the bold moves that Amazon made. And that kind of like held us back as a business. So the reality of how consumers use products has not necessarily shifted, but we don't have to talk about things anymore with the word secret sauce because the secret's out.
That's a great answer. That's crazy when upper management starts calling it the secret sauce. And when you try and push them to like, well, what does that mean? Well, we don't really know. It's like, ah, geez, this isn't good.
Yeah, it was terrifying.
This is time for Ben to move on to the next place.
Right. That's about right around the time that I did.
Yeah, but I mean, coming to a consultancy now, I would think that, I mean, in the grand history of internet and user experience and product, I mean, eBay at its founding that's a great place to come from.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, wow, that definitely, you have the credentials, which is awesome. So projects with, at eBay, five times as many ideas for projects as people. What, you're now a one-person show. So now new startups, new products come across your inbox, you meet people. People want to work with you, or it could not even be a full-on deciding to work on a full new project, but I mean a new startup, but say project just in a loose term of something that you're going to put your time, energy, and resources into, which is a finite amount of time and something that you don't want to completely consume your life. But I would like to know, Ben, personally, how you determine now when a new project is something that you should put your time, energy, and resources into.
Yeah. Because the work itself and the influence is the top priority for me, it really comes down to primarily an interview with them where it's almost like an interview in reverse. I want to ask them the questions that help me to make a good judgment as to whether I can actually provide value for them. You know, if the kinds of challenges that they're facing are such that they need to hire a great sales team and create a great operational workflow for their sales organization, that's not an area that I can really help. You know, I'm not well-versed in how to be a successful sales organization. I'm well-versed in how to scale a product organization or how to come up with good designs or how to ask the right kinds of questions to make the right judgment calls on a product strategy. But I want to understand from their perspective, what are the main pain points that they're seeing, how they're thinking about things, and in many ways, make sure that they're coachable as well. You know, I've had plenty of companies that I've talked to where they say all the right things, where they say, you know, we want to work on this and we want to work on that. And it seems like there's a great overlap with my own skill set. But when I probe a little bit deeper, I kind of realize that they also don't, while they're curious about what kinds of changes they might want to make, the reality is their appetite for making those changes is really limited. And in that case, then I just don't think that I'm going to have the kind of influence that I would want to have in that organization. You know, I don't want to just sort of have a bunch of logos attached to some sort of a resume of you know, work that I've done. I want to be able to actually point to the work that was completed with them and to point to the successes and sometimes the failures that they've had as well, and be able to say, either, you know, I was part of that team that was, you know, getting those kinds of results, or I at least learned something really valuable along the way. But if all I'm doing is talking and all they're doing is listening but not applying, then I think that's usually an indication that it's not necessarily going to be a good fit. So that's sort of like the first and foremost way that I would sort of like evaluate it. And then I think there's also just a level of chemistry that's important to maintain as well. It's probably a lot like dating, to be honest.
So what if the chemistry was right? The product was brilliant. The founders were completely coachable and you guys thought along the same sort of lines and you could see a scale for this product, but they didn't have funding and there was no money to hire you.
I would probably help them with funding.
Nice. This isn't like people listening can be like come and ask you for free work. I'm wondering where the dissection is between this is purely this has to be business or this cannot be like we're going to pursue something passionately.
Yeah, there is a way that I think that still works, and I've been very attracted throughout my whole career to those companies that are not only trying to, you know, make money in this corporate world, but that are also motivated by the social good that they're trying to do. You know, there's a reason that I moved across the country from Silicon Valley to the DC area to go work at this company, Opower, and it's because they were taking homes off the grid, and there was a clear, measurable set of outcomes that we were looking for. And I felt like, you know, for my kids and for everybody else, it was something that I was willing to bend over backwards and you know, kind of like take one for the team, if you will, because I knew that the social impact of what we were doing was really meaningful. And I still get a lot of, you know, personal benefit and personal satisfaction out of that work myself. And so looking forward, I've also, you know, done a lot of, you know, pro bono type work as well for companies that I think are trying to have a positive influence. You know, with some of the newfound time that I have, I could either go volunteer at a soup kitchen and have a positive impact that way, but that's not necessarily the way that I could have the maximum kind of impact. And one of the ways that I could do that is helping to influence those companies that are trying to make a positive change and help them as well. So, you know, that might be a way that I can have more kind of like influence. And again, it's kind of like, you know, you asked before about that separation of personal and professional, and it's just another example of how it's really hard to sort of like disambiguate the two.
Yeah, exactly. It is. All right, Ben, this has been a lot of fun. It's been a great conversation. I want to wrap up on something that I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap, and we're going to extend it out for you because your entrepreneurial quote unquote that nobody can see you're doing is relatively short, but what you've been doing and sort of the successes and things you've had started much earlier. And you've had a pretty, like, I mean, just from going to your site and doing this research, you've had, I mean, what looks from the outside like a full life, right? Former professional poker player, held hostage in Europe in 94. Like, there's a lot of things that people will never get to experience that you've experienced. Plus eBay early on till now running your own thing. So the entrepreneurial gap is this idea that we, as dreamers and entrepreneurs, we get stuck living in this gap where we're never successful because success is always ahead of us. When we get that many users, when we get that much revenue, when we get to stand on this stage, when we get to do this, we'll be successful. But right before we get there, we set bigger, loftier goals into the future, and we end up in this weird gap that's never where we want to be. So I would love right now, Ben, if you could stop and turn around behind you and look at everything you've accomplished in your career up till this point, the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses, and tell me just how you feel up till right now with what you've accomplished.
I guess I talk to my wife about this all the time because we always have that next question of, you know, what should we do next, right? You know, should I go back into, you know, running product at a larger organization, or should I continue to do the sort of, you know, quote unquote lifestyle business that's there now and sort of remain my own sort of solo entrepreneur? And in many ways, that conversation leads us to look backwards as well. So I'll speak from that point of view. When we do that, I think our joint perspective on it is that there's been a lot of good things that have been accomplished. If I sort of look back at what legacy I think would, you know, maybe be left behind, I would say there's a lot of successful companies that are there that are on the right track and moving in the right direction. There's a lot of jobs that are created off of that. I would say that there are some solid methodologies that are out there around product management and UX design, although I would wish that they could be shared a lot more broadly than they have been so far. And there's been some really, you know, positive social change that's happened as well. You know, I remember a story from eBay where we were doing this conference, and this person, this is, you know, back in the early 2000s, and there's this person who showed up in a wheelchair and was missing two legs and one arm. And it seemed like it was a real, you know, just amazing feat that he was even able to get to this conference on his own, flying around and things like that. And he was so knowledgeable about the eBay product that I had to ask him at the end of the conversation, you know, why are you here? You know everything already. You could be the one teaching a lot of these kinds of courses. And he said, you know, I'm here to thank you guys. You know, I was, you know, injured in the war in Iraq, and I came back and I, you know, worked construction and I couldn't do that anymore. And my wife, you know, was at home with the kids, and we had kind of decided to go that path. And this has sort of saved, you know, my marriage and my family and my career and my self-esteem and all these things. And he just wanted to, you know, take this amazing, you know, this amazing opportunity to come and thank us for that. And so I get really inspired and kind of touched by those types of stories. And so for me, as I sort of look back, I try to think about, you know, for every one of those people who did actually fly there to thank us, you know, how many other people were out there who didn't, you know, make the trip, but still feel the same way. And the same kind of thing when it comes to O-Power and, you know, saving energy. And a lot of the companies that I work with now, you know, there's a company called LiveSafe that I work with that is trying to help to keep people more safe and to try to address some of the issues that you're seeing with sexual assaults on college campuses. And they're doing a great job of that. And so just, you know, being a part of those kinds of things and looking back, I kind of feel like there's this positive kind of, you know, set of outcomes that I look for. And in particular, where I can kind of like mesh the two together. So if I look back and say, I was able to apply these product concepts or these strategies to help those companies then to succeed, to accomplish these, you know, sets of social goods, they're all overlapping at the same time. And to me, in a lot of ways, when I sort of think about what I do next, and I take that lens of looking back at what I've done previously, what I realize is that there's this opportunity to have a lot of synergies across those things. You don't have to figure out how to divide your time between helping others and getting better with product and making companies succeed financially, that there's a way of combining all these kinds of things together. And so as I look forward, I look to try to do just more of the same kind of things that I would do when I look back. So, you know, if you know, I got hit by a bus tomorrow, would I be really happy with what, you know, what kind of accomplishments were there? You know, I'd have to say yes. I feel like that's very much been the case. And with that mentality, I think it's easy to kind of look forward and say, I just want to do more of what I'm doing right now and really enjoy that and see how, you know, how much positive kind of influence that I can have throughout the industry. And the more that I can have, the better off it's going to be. But I don't have that chasing the rainbow kind of mentality of there's always that next thing. And you know, sure, like I'd like to write a book and I'd like to do more blogging. And, you know, we always have next things that we want to accomplish that we haven't accomplished yet. But does that mean that we haven't arrived yet? Or does that mean that we're, you know, sort of arriving every step along the way? You know, you set milestones for yourself and you achieve those milestones and you can get sort of a level of excitement and passion around accomplishing those milestones. And just because you have that next thing that's sort of like set forward, doesn't mean that as an entrepreneur, you have to look back and say, you haven't arrived yet.
Yeah, brilliantly said. Does it mean we haven't arrived yet, or are we arriving every step of the way? I'm probably going to steal that.
You're welcome to.
Well, that was awesome. I've had a lot of fun, Ben. And is there somewhere where we can send the listener to find out more about you personally?
Yeah, absolutely. I've stood up a website. It's foster-innovation.com, or you can always go reach out to me on LinkedIn. I love to connect with people, learn about what kinds of things they're working on, and see if there are ways that I can contribute.
Excellent. So LinkedIn and Foster Innovation, I will link to both of those in the show notes so they're easy for you to find. Reach out to Ben if you have any questions and you want to follow up, or just tell him you heard him on the show. He'd love to hear from you, I'm sure. All right, Ben. Thank you again so much for taking the time to join me today. This has been a lot of fun, and just please keep doing what you're doing because it is awesome and inspiring to watch.
That's great. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, that was a fun conversation. Thank you so much, Ben. I hope you out there enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed taking part in that. We, Ben and I, we geeked out a little bit over product and but I mean, getting to talk to somebody who was around at the beginning of eBay, like this goes back for the internet. This goes back as almost as far as you can. And they created an amazing product that changed, I mean, the way a lot of people even earn a living online is like selling on eBay. And this, so it's kind of, it held a sort of a nice warm spot for me. And I wanted to get into it. But other than that, we really got into some really, really good things. I love how Ben has spent his years working for companies that have seen massive growth and scale. And up until just over a year ago, he just up and quit and decided to do it himself as a consultant. And so it's really, really cool just talking to him about the going through that process. And so I'm going back through the conversation, and there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 spots I listened to. Then I went back and listened to it again, and there was 3. Then there was 2, and then there was 1. There was that one thing that Ben said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
And I think that same thing kind of thing is true for me. So I don't think that that's necessarily a decision that you have to make that precludes you from scaling. Sometimes that's the way in which you scale. And sometimes that's the way in which you choose not to scale, in my case. But I think that however you define success for yourself, staying true, at least for me, has been something that I've had to really focus on. And I think that I've gotten a lot out of.
And that's the hack. Ben. I love this. This is excellent. And this is something that I've touched on before, but I haven't gone into it this deep. And I love the fact that it's really about staying true to what you want out of business. I really try and push people into this because if you don't think about this before you start creating the business that you want to build and focus on really creating that exact business that you want, if you just kind of push for scale and push, you can end up with a business that is totally controlling your life and is kind of just a job that you have now and not actually what you wanted to create, the lifestyle you wanted it to create. And so I love how Ben is using this idea to stay true to exactly what he wants and using it to choose to scale or, as he says, his case, to not scale, which is totally, totally fine. And this is something that we often struggle with as entrepreneurs. We think that scale and hiring employees and growth is always the end goal, and it's not. You can reach points. I remember talking to about 70 episodes ago, Sunny Brown. And she's done some massive things and her company, she has big clients that want to hire her. She had somebody that wanted to try and invest in a part of her company and see massive scale. And she turned it all down and she's happy with it. And this is something that Ben is doing now. And you really need to know that you can do this. You can run a business exactly how it should really be an extension of yourself and what you want and the lifestyle that you want to create. But you do have to stay true to that. And you do have to really internalize it and kind of, I guess, really, really kind of back it up, really stay, I don't know. You know what I mean? You really have to focus on it and you have to kind of be cocky and just like, this is how it's going to be. It's not going to be any way that I don't want it to be because it's my business. It's what I've created and it's what I want to continue to create. And so I do love this attitude of just staying true. And for that, I thank you, Ben. All right. That was a lot of fun. As always, thank you so very, very, very much for stopping by. Thanks for taking the time. You have a lot of choices of podcasts out there, and I'm very happy that you choose to spend this time with me. The book, my book, came out yesterday. htebook.com, or if you just buy books at Amazon, that's where it's for sale, actually. htebook.com just takes you to Amazon. But you can just go to Amazon, type in John Naster, or type in Hack the Entrepreneur. It's like $3 right now for my book. Seriously, it's cheaper than a coffee. And it'll energize you much better than a coffee will, trust me. It'll kick you in the ass better than a coffee will, too. Check it out, though. I would love to get it into your hands. I worked really hard on it. You can also buy paperback copies. They're not $3, but they're not that much more. But go to Amazon. Do that if you dig it. leave me a review and a rating. You know how much those things count. You do, don't you? Yes. Check it out, though. Drop me an email, john@hacktheentrepreneur, or tweet me. Let me know what you think of the book after you read it. It's a short read. It's 150 pages, I think. You can get through it in a night or two, and I think you will really dig it. If you don't, I don't know. Just, like, email me. Tell me about it. Tell me why you don't like it. I'll send you $3 back. I promise. I don't want your money if you don't want it, but I know I put so much work into it, and I know you will get a lot out of it, and I know you'll dig it. So, yeah, grab it. Amazon, right now. Go, go, go. All right, thank you. I do appreciate you stopping by. And please, as always, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.